Good morning. Good to be here again. Weekend meetings are strange in the sense of by the time we arrive at Sunday morning class, we're beyond halfway through, and by the time the day is over, we'll be all the way through. So short meeting, still packed with a lot of lessons. We would have had 7 lessons total, and that's just a great way. From a preacher standpoint, it's a great way to do it, and so I appreciate that very much. Especially when you're dealing with this material, there's a big advantage to having multiple lessons on a Saturday because generally anybody that is there for lesson 1 on Saturday automatically gets all 3 of those, and that's a big help as well. So you get everybody together, not as many schedule conflicts as you might have otherwise. We've been talking about God's blueprint for stronger families. We talked about finding God in your marriage was Friday night and how important it is to make sure our marriages are focused on the right thing. The idea of marriage is always about God, as is all life, always about God primarily. And then yesterday we got a chance to talk about husband's role, wife's role, and then talk about the value of and the work of singles in God's kingdom as well. Today we're going to talk about those that are parents in this lesson. And so it's a lesson that we have entitled Arrows in the Hands of a Warrior. I want you to turn to Psalm 127 for a moment. That's where that passage comes from, or that statement comes from. And then I want to ask you a couple questions regarding that. When you think about raising children, I can tell you, I mean, ours are raised. And whatever we could do has been done. There's not much you can do beyond that. They're already gone. They have their own homes. We can continue to have an influence on them and on the grandchildren. But as the writer of Hebrews says, we did the best we could. We tried, but didn't always go the way that you'd want it to. You didn't always succeed even in your attempts to do what you wanted to do. And so someone has asked me, what was the hardest job I ever had? Without question, it is being a parent. It is the job that comes with the most second guessing. Am I doing the right thing? Are we doing the right thing? How's it going to turn out? What are they going to do? There are times that you lie awake wondering, have you made the right decisions? When the children start getting older, especially when they get more independent and start going into high school and things of that nature, are they going to make the right decisions? Have you trained them up the way that you should? A lot of trepidation with that. And on the other hand, incredible joys in childhood as well. As you're raising children, great joy, great excitement that they bring to the marriage as well. And so it's just kind of like that roller coaster ride sometimes. And what you're trying to do is stay at the plateaus and the peaks up here as much as possible and keep those dips as shallow as you can and as short as you can. They're going to come. They come in marriage, they come in raising children, they come in life. That's just the way it is. And so how do we accomplish that? There's mountaintop experiences, and sometimes they give way, hopefully not to great disasters, but to some valley disasters, if you will. In Psalm 127, we read these words. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. So here would be the question, why? Why would God choose that particular analogy, do you think, to talk about children? I mean, this is weaponry that he's describing. I mean, there are a lot of other things that children are. They're incredible blessings. And you could talk about, he even says they are a gift as well. Children are a gift, and we need to understand that. When we have children, that's a gift of the Lord. That's a heritage. That's an incredible blessing to be able to have children. And I think that's why he says, and then if you can have multiple children, even a greater blessing as you get to participate in a family like that. But he says, arrows in the hands of a warrior. That's the way he wants to describe your children and my children. So why do you think he would choose that particular analogy? They're what?
They're the only sinless ones among us.
All right, so the only sinless ones among us when they're young and when they're pure and when they're innocent. Why would God tell you your kids are a weapon? You ever think about that? I mean, that's an arrow. I want you to think about this with me for just a moment. I love this particular quote from a gentleman. Before I got married, I had 6 theories about raising kids. Now I have 6 children and no theories. How many people understand that quote completely? Yeah, probably all parents that have multiple children, don't you? I remember before we had our kids. I had it completely figured out. I knew exactly what I was going to do, how I was going to do it, how you're going to raise these children who are obedient and at near perfection level, and then you have one.
Can you get that kid to shut up?
Yes. You know, and our son, as I mentioned, we just came from Lexington. Our son and his wife have triplets that just turned 2 years old, so we got to go up for a 2-year-old birthday. They're finding out exactly how different it is than you might think. I loved one lady who said that when she got a proper realistic view, she said she came into her house one day and there were her 3 children and 3 of their friends were sitting in the living room in a circle. And she couldn't see what they were doing, but they were all giggling and playing with something. And she said as she got closer, she realized that there were 6 baby skunks in the living room that the kids were playing with. And so she yelled, "Kids, run quick." Each kid grabbed a skunk and ran. She said, it was at that moment that I knew raising children, motherhood, was not exactly what I thought it was going to be. Whatever the experience is, we learned that it's different. You could take this approach. Parenting is really not all that difficult if you just have the right approach. That's kind of the Mark Twain approach. I don't know if you've ever seen his quote. He said, children, the way to raise children is to put them in a barrel, feed them through a hole in the barrel until they turn 16, and then plug the hole. So for a humorist, that's probably not a great offering or a great solution. But we do understand there's difficulty, there's challenges with that. And so what he says here is that they are arrows in the hands of a warrior. He says that's what they are. Well, I just want to break that apart for just a second as we think about this. So arrows are all similar. They're all similar. They're structured similarly. Children are all similar. We talked about that the other day, how children are similar. They come from the same genetic structure in our family, and yet they are totally different from one another. Arrows are the same way. But children and arrows have one thing in common, and I think that's what this passage is going to be pointing toward. All are intended for flight. All. You don't have children so that you can have children for a lifetime. You have children so that you can launch them into the world so that they can do what they're supposed to do. And that's a challenge sometimes, but it's important that we understand that if we're going to understand how to properly raise them under the guidance of God. When he talks about raising children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, that is not so they will be obedient in my family and in my household only. That is so that I can prepare my children to be who they're supposed to be, because they won't always be my children, not primarily. When I do a wedding ceremony, I have the bride and groom turn and face their parents at one point. And I talk to the bride and groom and I talk to the parents. And so I may say, in other words, if the bride's name was Judy, I'd say, "Judy, look at your mother. Because starting today, she will no longer primarily be your relationship, not the primary relationship. You will primarily no longer be her daughter. You will primarily be this man's wife." That's the primary relationship. You won't cease to be her daughter, but it will not be the primary relationship. And I tell the mother, "Look at your daughter, because starting today, she will no longer primarily be your daughter. She will primarily be this man's wife." And I do the same thing with the husband. That's important, I think, to understand that principle of severance in Genesis chapter 2. Well, that's what he's wanting to, he wants us to understand that from, not at the day of the wedding, he wants us to understand that when the children are first brought into the marriage, that they are intended for flight. So I want you to think in terms of the statement that is made by Paul to the Corinthians when he says, "You are our epistle." In other words, that's what I'm trying to pass on. I'm trying to make sure that faith continues, that there's another generation that continues, that there are those who will understand what God has done and who God is, not like the generation that's spoken about in Judges. It's my job to make sure. In other words, my job is as a steward. of everything God gives me. If God gives me children, which he did, he gave us, blessed us with three children, he says, but you know, they're not really yours to keep. They're yours to use to his glory, both when they're at home and as I'm preparing them to leave home. Whatever money he gives me, I'm a steward of. Whatever time he gives me, I am a steward of. He says, it isn't yours just to have. What are you going to do with it? And so we need to think in terms of our children. If they're arrows in the hands of a warrior, how important it is that we bring them up that way. So let's do arrow 101. Arrow making 101 for just a second here. Four parts of an arrow, of every arrow. Four parts, if it's going to be usable. There's a shaft. We understand that. That's the part that all the rest of the parts are attached to, whether it's wooden, whether it's aluminum, or some kind of composite like they make them today. But there's a shaft, and that's important. There is, in fact, what's called fletching. We sometimes call it the feathers. Fletching serves a purpose. An arrow will not serve the purpose of an arrow if it doesn't have fletching. They're not always feathers, so that's why it's not always referred to as feathers, but you have fletching on there. You have a nock on the back of an arrow. That's the part that the string attaches to so that you can launch it and you have an arrowhead. Every arrow has those four parts if it's going to be a functional arrow. I think it is incredible that God would use. I'm not saying this is specifically why he used this example, but for me, this just helps to shed some light on this for me because he says, so let's talk about the structure of your child. He says you have a shaft, which is an identity, which in other words, everything else is attached to the shaft. If the shaft is not straight, if the shaft is not the way that it's supposed to be, then the entire arrow is faulty. So he says the identity is critical of your child and the structure of your child. He says your child has character. What's the purpose of the feathers on an arrow? Anybody ever shot an arrow in here? It's to help it fly, and to help it fly what? Yeah, it's to straight fly, right? To help it fly straight and true. If you were to pull one side of the fletching off, the arrow's going to go one way or the other, isn't it? If you pull it all off, it's liable to go anywhere. So the fletching is there. That's the nature of character. What's going to keep my children straight in life? What am I trying to develop in my children in their structure that will make them continue to fly true? There's the nock, which is that which attaches it to the string. For our children, that is the relationship. What attaches my children to other people? What attaches them to their spouse? What attaches them to their friends? What attaches them to the world? The relationships that a child has are absolutely critical to them being able to fly straight and true. And then there is the mission or the goal. An arrowhead has one purpose, and that is to hit a target. To pierce a target, whatever that may be. It may be this type, it may be some other type of arrowhead, but that is always the point, as we would say. What's the point of an arrow? It isn't just to shoot for just fun and it to go anywhere. Arrows are shot at something. They're intended to hit something. So what's the target for my children? What's the mission? What's the goal I'm trying to prepare them for so that they can achieve what God would have them to achieve? So does that make sense, just as far as structure and how that ties? I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 5, because we're going to get there in just a moment, because I think it's remarkable the way chapter 5 of Matthew is set up. Again, I don't think, and I wouldn't say, that God has Matthew 5 intended to tie to Psalm 127, but I think it beautifully ties to the idea of the structure spiritually of a human, and our children therefore included. And so let's think about that for just a moment, because here's what we need to understand with our children. I have to help my children think the right way. You want to know why it's important to train them in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord? Why they need to understand the Word of God? They need to have a right thought process. You think about the world that we are in right now. And the things that are being proposed by the culture that we are in right now that are grossly against God's will, grossly against the idea of morality, my children need to be raised in such a fashion that they know the truth, that they understand, that they're thinking the right way, that just because the majority of the people around them say something does not make it true. They need to have the right thoughts first, because here's what happens with your child or anybody else. Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. So a habit, reap a character. So a character, reap a destiny. It starts right here. What are we thinking? What are they thinking? Because when you start to think something, as we've already pointed out this week, God tries to get our thinking right so we can get our actions right. And when you repeat actions over and over again, whether they are repeated because of right thought or wrong thought, you're going to develop some habits. And so when you develop habits, that starts to determine who you are, because you just, that becomes your default, if you will, because you've done it over and over and over again. And once you establish your default or your character or who you are, you set your destiny. I tell children, when I'm dealing with teens and dealing with a teen class and such, it is extremely hard to get a high schooler, extremely hard to get a high schooler to understand that they legitimately might die tomorrow. I'm not saying intellectually. Intellectually, they comprehend that. All of us, any of us could die tomorrow. But I'm telling you, when you're young and you're 16 or 17 or 18 years old and you're healthy and you're enjoying life and you're doing well, it doesn't register. It registers more when you get a little older. You know, when the government says, hey, you're eligible for your Social Security check, you register. Whatever that day is, it's closer than it was when I was 17. And we had a guy in Kansas City, he says, I'm so old, I don't buy green bananas. So you understand the brevity of life more as you get more years behind you. And so I tell these high schoolers, I said, you know what? Don't think in these terms. Don't think in terms of, I better not do that because I might die tomorrow, though that's true. I tell them, here's the real danger. Don't make those choices, don't do those things, because you're going to set a pattern for your life and it's going to change who you become, and then you are going to die someday. You need to set the pattern now for who you're going to become, and that's what we need to do with our children. We're helping to guide them that way. So here's what I want to think about. I want to hit these four ideas quickly so we can look at these passages in Matthew 5 and see how they tie in. You want your child to have the right identity. That your child needs to know that because they are God's, they have intrinsic value. It is not based on their ability to play a sport. It is not based on the way they look. It is not based on the amount of money they have. It is not based on the grades they make in school or how intelligent they are. You need your child to know that they have intrinsic value. And the psalmist says, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. God looks at every one of us. I don't care what we look like, what our IQ is, how good we are at sports. God looks at us and says, you are an incredible creation because I made you. Our children need to understand that. They have to start with the right identity, because the world will beat them down regarding their identity, especially their peers in school. We all understand that. Every one of us that has been through school understands who were the kids that were most well thought of in school, and they centered around external things, whether it was sports or grades or the intelligence or looks or whatever else it is. Your child needs to understand you have incredible value. You have incredible value to us and to God and therefore to the world. So make sure they understand the identity that they have. Secondly, You want your children to have the right character. I want to raise my children, or wanted to raise my children, in such a fashion that they're willing to stand up, that they're willing to do the things that the others around them won't do, not to go with the crowd, but to be willing to stand up against the crowd. Why was that critical? Because they're going to be forced into making that decision. When my children were 4 or 5, their decisions were made by me or their mother. When my children go to high school, or my children go to college, you better have done some training, because there are going to be a lot of people trying to help them make the decisions that they need to make. And so I want them to have the kind of character that when somebody says this, they say, no, I'm not doing that. That's not who I am. That's not who my family is. We are children of God. I want my children to be strong enough to make that stand, because they're going to have that pressure put up against them, no question about that. And God tells us, if I'll do my job at training them, train that child up in the way that he should go. That's a proverb. That's a truism, I understand. But he says, train that child up. He says, the basic rule is, if we'll work hard as parents, for the most part, he's saying a truism is, that child will stay faithful to God. Always? No. God's not saying this is an absolute. But think about, if it's not even an absolute, if you do all you can to train them up in the way of the Lord, what's the chance that the children go in the right direction if we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing as parents and training them up? That's when you end up with the Joshua or the Judges 2 situation. There arose another generation that knew not God, no relationship, nor did they know the things that he had done, it says in verse 10. How could that possibly happen? How could that possibly happen? Tell me how it is that a generation could be raised up that didn't know God or the things he had done. What's that? Yeah, they weren't exposed to it. They weren't taught it. Somebody wasn't doing what they were supposed to be doing. That's what it says. You started with these two incredibly faithful men, Joshua and Caleb, and then all the elders that survived them, it said they served the Lord, but apparently they didn't do what they should have with their children, because you had a generation that arose that knew not God nor the things he had done. We need to help our children understand that they need to be alert. They need to be well prepared. If I'm going to help them have the right character, I need to prep them. I need to help them understand what kind of things might happen. You know, there's a reason that we're benefited now from all the early radar systems that exist in the world. It's a help. If you're in an area that has tornadoes like we were in Kansas City, they have tornadoes in Nashville? Occasionally. Kansas City was just like, here's the freeway for the tornadoes. It's like, let's just come through Kansas and Missouri. Let's just book it right through here. And so we watched incredible destruction. So they've got sirens all over the place, and they've got that Doppler radar that they're warning you ahead of time. And I can't tell you how many times somebody came on the TV or the radio and said, get to your basement now. You think that's not a help? Somebody says, you know what? You need to be aware of what's coming. You get in the basement, you can be saved. You stay out in the yard and play, take your life in your own hands. God would have us to have that kind of character. What about relationships? Think about what God would have them to be. To be compassionate, to be like Jesus, to be willing to see other people in the right way, not to judge people based on the way they looked or even on their circumstances. But Jesus looked out at a crowd and he just hurt for them. I want my children to hurt for other people that are hurting, because that's how Jesus reached them. I want them to be compassionate. I want them to care. I want them to love in that way. No question. I want them to be a servant. Try to raise your children. We try to raise our children so that they're not thinking of themselves. Well, that's easy, because kids rarely think of themselves, right? The Finding Nemo. The pelicans in Finding Nemo may be the best illustration of children ever. Mine. I mean, children are just selfish. They want, they take. When we're watching the triplets interact, I mean, I know everybody that has children, small children, have seen this. There can be a toy that nobody cares about until one of them picks it up. But as soon as he picks it up, the others all want it. And so teaching them to be the other kind, the servant, the one who says, no, you know what? Let me give to you. Let me serve you. Let me do what I can for you. That was the nature of our Lord, certainly. I want them to be generous, not to hold on to what they have. God says, even those of us that he's given the ability to work, in Ephesians 4, why did he say it's important for you to work? He says, don't steal. But work with your hands, but then he says, here's why. You remember the reasoning?
So you can give
to other people. He said, you know, we don't always think that way. We work and think of ourselves, but he's saying, I want to teach my children, so I want them to be a generous type of person. And it's important to do that. As I think about their mission, how important is it that I want my children to have worthy goals? Where are you going in life? What do you want to do with your life? What is it you want to accomplish for the Lord? How important is it to set those goals and then to have a plan to stick with them? You have to set a plan. You have to understand, all right, well, here's what I want to do. Here's the kind of prayer warrior I want to be. Here's the kind of person evangelistically I want to be. And I set these goals for myself, but then I have to say, all right, so here's where I am. Here's where I want to be. How am I going to get there? I remember when I wanted to change my prayer life, that came after I read a statement by Martin Luther years and years ago, that said that Martin Luther started every day with 2 hours of prayer. He said, I start every day with 2 hours of prayer because I have so much to do. When I read the statement, I thought, got to be a misquote. That's just backwards. I have so much to do. I need to get my prayer in real quick so I can do what I got to do. He's saying, I've got so much to do. I start every day with 2 hours of prayer. So I thought, this is what I thought. You know what? Tomorrow, I'm going to pray for 2 hours when I start. How successful do you think I was at that? Not very. If you haven't ever done that, that's a discipline. That's building yourself to that. And so if our children set goals as to what they want to be for the Lord, what kind of husband they want to be, what kind of wives they want to be, whatever it is, make sure you put a plan in effect. All right, so here's what I want us to do with that. I want us to turn to Matthew chapter 5, if you haven't already done that, and look at the statements that are made, because there are some things that our children need. If my children are going to have these things in their life, it is absolutely critical. Not helpful. It is absolutely critical that they see these things in me first. Critical. Now, am I saying they can't overcome a bad example? I'm not saying that. I mentioned to you, I grew up in a totally dysfunctional home. And with the help of others and striving and the Lord coming into my life, you can make changes in your life. But I'm just telling you, that's a harder road at least to start on than if somebody will at least set the proper example for you to begin with. Help them understand. Because one of the things I realize, we have the three sons I mentioned. All three are married. Here's just one concept. Every single thing they understand about being a husband and about being a father starts or is filtered first through what they see in me. They can overcome some of that, but I'm just telling you, that's where it starts. That's the first example of a father they get to see. That's the first example of a husband they get to see. And so it's critically important that I am who I need to be. So parents must parent purposefully. If you're going to expect your children to have goals and to achieve spiritually in life, then it is critical that we as parents seek to achieve the same way. That I am setting the spiritual goals for myself, that I am trying to set the example, so that I am exposing my children to God so that we don't raise a generation that knows not God nor the things he has done. Here's what one man wrote. He said, I'm pretty sure that I need to be the person now that I want them to be someday. So if I want them to care about justice and mercy and compassion, then I have to live it out. If I want them to be fearless and bold and courageous, well, guess what? And if I want them to pray, I must pray. If I want them to know God is love, and I want them to know that he is very fond of each of them, and I want them to forgive and offer grace and second chances and love tougher, well, then here we go. I'm about to live a better truth in my life. That's a good quote. That's a good way of putting it. If that's what I want in them, then I'm about to live differently than I may have if I wasn't thinking in those terms. So if we're raising children, God says it starts first here. What kind of example am I giving them? Because that's what they're going to choose to do. So think about these things. What about their identity? I need to give them an identity that is grounded in God. It needs to be grounded in God. That is who they are. That's who they are. David, when he went up on the roof, forgot who he was. He was a servant of God and king of Israel, but he didn't act like the servant of God or the king of Israel. I want my children to understand. If you're going to have an identity, then I need to have an identity. And so what they need to see in me is the person that has grounded my identity in God. So I'm a father. You may be a mother, a husband, a wife, a friend. You realize you are the filter. Anybody ever remember the commercial that Latter-day Saints used to put out some commercials that were very good commercials, but one of them I remember in particular. It was a father and a son washing a car. Anybody old enough to remember that commercial? The father picks up a sponge out of the bucket and he's washing the front of the car. The boy picks a sponge up and he's washing it with his dad. And the father gets a hose and he sprays off the part that he's washed. And the boy gets a hose and he sprays off the part that he's washed. The father goes and sits down by a tree. The son goes and sits down beside him by the tree. And the father reaches into his shirt pocket and pulls out a pack of cigarettes and taps one out, puts a cigarette in his mouth and puts the pack of cigarettes down, and he lights the cigarette and puts the lighter down. The little boy picks up a pack of cigarettes, knocks one out, puts a cigarette in his mouth, picks up the lighter and lights a cigarette. And all it said was, they're watching. They're watching. Children will call you on the carpet in a heartbeat when you do not behave properly. Don't think they're not watching. They hear. When you're having discussions, understand they hear. They watch. They see the things that are going on. And so in my relationship with God, I want them to understand, above and beyond everything else, I am a child of God. And that's what they need to see. They need to see a child of God who loves the other children of God, who's doing everything he can to be with the children of God and to serve his God. He's the kind of person that needs to be acting like a Christian in every facet of his life, because that's who he is. When our son would leave the house, our oldest son in particular, we would do this with. When he got a little bit older and would leave the house, go out somewhere, I would stop him on occasion. I'd say, "What's your name?" He looked at me like I had lost it, but it wasn't the only time he thought that. So, but he says, "Matthew." I said, "What's your last name?" Again, you know, he thinks I'm nuts, but he goes, "Matthew Broyles." I said, "Just remember something. Broyles is my name too. And so every time you go out of the house, you're taking my name with you. So behave the way you behave because of who you are." That's the way we are as Christians. I wear the name of Christ. There is nothing more detrimental to the kingdom of God than Christians who don't act like Christ and yet carry the name of Christ. Remember when David committed that adultery with Bathsheba? And all the horrific things that he did, bringing about the death of Uriah because of that? And Nathan the prophet goes to him, and what did Nathan fault him for? Do you remember that? Nathan said, "Because you have given occasion to the enemy to blaspheme the name of God." He said, "There's why you're going to lose your son. Because people are going to speak about God badly because of the way you act. We need to make sure that above all, I understand that I am a Christian." And so because of that, he says in Matthew chapter 5, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." There's the identity. This is who you are. Poor in spirit. Those who mourn. Not mourn over people who die. Everybody mourns over people who die. I think he's talking about mourning over the sin that we have and the sins that we have had. He's saying, does that grieve me? Because that's my identity. So I can be a man after the heart of God, just like David was. Even though I make mistakes, even though I sin, if I humble myself and I mourn over the things that I've done, that's my identity. I need to become dependent on God. I am not only forgiven, I throw my life on the mercy of God and his throne, because I am totally dependent on him for everything I am in this life. And I need to recognize that. Never, ever have I done anything that is worthy of what God has given me. Never. I mean, I try to serve him, but he says, "It's only because I have given you my grace that you have what you have." I'm totally dependent on him for every aspect of my life spiritually. No question about that. Secondly, I need to have character grounded in the word. How important is that? How important is it that we think in terms of, he says, "Blessed are the meek." That's a character trait, meek. That's a character trait that just says it's strong. It's not weak. It's strong, but controlled. It's strength that is used to describe animals that have been tamed. Think the animal lacks any strength? You got an animal that's tamed. He doesn't lack strength. Somebody's just brought the strength under control. Anytime we would go to SeaWorld and you think, I mean, 'cause it still boggles my mind. How do you train a whale? Honestly, how do you train a whale? Who was the first person that even thought about that? Hey, let me jump in the tank with him. I think I can get control of this thing. Incredible power. That's the idea. He's saying it's meek. That is the character. Our children need to have strength. They need to understand that they are, in fact, strong. That they have strength, but they manage to keep that strength in control. It's the idea of learning how to act. We know how to act at other kids. You go to your favorite football team, you're going to a high school football game or a college football game or something, and you're in the stands and your team scores, how are you supposed to act? Cheerful, scream, yell, cheer, whatever the case may be, right? You go to a library, how are you supposed to act? Quiet. We understand that. We know in certain circumstances how we're supposed to act. Meek is just saying, here's how you're supposed to act as a Christian. Here's how you're supposed to act. You're gentle. Doesn't mean you lack strength, but it means you're not doing anything that would cause the name of Christ to be blasphemed. But he says, you want another character? Hungering and thirsting. Hungering and thirsting. I don't know if I've ever hungered in my life. I'm saying truly hungered. Because there weren't many times in my life that I've ever, at least not willingly, ever done without a meal, much less like days worth of meals. Have you ever, our kids apparently were starving frequently. They always, everything was in the extremes. Yeah, they were either stuffed and or starving, freezing or burning up. They were never comfortable apparently. So they say that, but I've never been starving. But he's saying hungering. I'm talking about where you can't wait to get it because it's just the anticipation. I've got to have it. Hungering and thirsting for what, though? What does he say to hunger and thirst for? Righteousness. I want to just absolutely gobble up every aspect of righteousness that I can possibly gobble up. I want to be as strong for God as I can possibly be. I want to do everything that I can to please my God in that fashion. He says, that's who I need to be. I need to have that kind of character. But then he says also, pure in heart. I love that word. That pure in heart carries the idea of single focus, pure. In other words, like pure gold. Pure gold means what? It's refined, and so what's left when you have pure gold? Everything is taken out except the gold, right? Everything. But you have a ring, like I have a ring on. The ring's not pure gold. The ring's gold. It's 14 karat gold, which means what? Means that there are 14 parts of gold and 10 parts, because 24 carats is pure. So 14 parts of gold, 10 parts of some other metal to make it harder, to make it more usable for a ring. But he's saying your heart can't have anything else in it. Pure in heart. It is absolutely singly focused, a heart that is purely and wholly dedicated to God. He says, that's the character. That's what my children need to see in me. How are they going to know that? Tell me some things that would indicate to my child that I was not pure in heart. You ever think about that?
Entertainment choices.
Oh, absolutely. What about my entertainment choices? My children see me watching the wrong kinds of things, the kinds of things that are portraying images that Christians ought not to be watching. You ever think about our movie industry? You realize the MPAA is 24 people in California. So that's already not a help. I hope. If you're from California, I apologize. Barry. But 24 people in California who sit down and watch a movie and they determine what its rating is going to be. 24 people are making that decision for you, sitting in a room, and they determine. And then they have ratings that say things like an R rating, which says nobody under 17 without a parent or legal guardian is even allowed in. If that is the movie industry with its liberality is making that judgment, how does a Christian have to view that? I mean, should we not be more stringent than they are? Should we not be careful about that? What kind of language I allow to come into my house? Love the statement by Job, and we'll see that again tonight. But Job says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why should I look upon another woman? First time I ever saw that verse, I was a young man. First time I ever saw that verse, it was on the television set of a good friend of mine. I thought, what an interesting thought. Don't even turn it on. See the quote. Make sure, before you even turn it on, understand, I'm not putting anything unholy before my eyes. Entertainment choices, no question about that. So easy for them to understand that I'm making poor choices when they hear things and see things, when I go places, when I say things about other people. How pure in heart am I when they hear me talking about somebody else at church? So I'm gossiping and they're thinking, wow. I mean, it's important that I'm giving them the proper message there. It's critically important that they understand that this is a citizenship-defined trait. By that I mean, how many people in here are citizens of the United States of America? But that's really not your citizenship, is it? Paul says, We're here on a work visa. You realize that? You're on earth on a work visa. Because Paul says our citizenship is in heaven. That's where we're going. That's where home is. We're here just to work for the Lord while he gives us the time on this earth. These are citizenship characteristics. They are saying, here's who you are, Mark, because here's where your citizenship is. It is in heaven. Thirdly, their relationships. They need to have relationships based on love. And so what does he do in the Beatitudes? He says, blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers. Those are both relationship terms. They are how I am treating other people. They tie to my character, but they specifically talk about how I'm dealing with other people. And so one deals with my ability to forgive, my ability to demonstrate the mercy of Christ. Can you imagine where we'd be without the mercy of God? Wow, yeah, absolutely lost. I've said more than once in my life, especially as a kid, when I'd be having a discussion with my mom or dad and thought something that I should have. I know I have said, all I'm asking for is what I deserve. Fortunately for me, they never gave me that. God does not give me that. Do we have 5 minutes before the next bell? Huh?
2 or 3 minutes.
2 or 3 minutes, okay. That'll be enough. So we think about being the peacemakers, and so it's the relationship over rights attitude. It's the ability to say, I'm both forgiving and reconciling. I'm not only going to forgive somebody, I'm going to do everything I can to bring them back together. The peacemakers between us and God. And then clearly the mission that I'm trying to give my children is that they need to be based on God's glory, everything they're doing. He says there are those that are persecuted for God. Why? Because the main thing that they wanted to do in life was bring glory to God. Paul said, I magnify Christ. That's his goal, whether by life or by death. It didn't make any difference. He said, my mission in life is to bring glory to God. And I want my children to see that that is my mission in life. And my grandchildren to see that that is the mission of my life. Bringing glory to God. Because if that is not your goal, double problems. One, if that's not your goal, you're very likely not to be rewarded with the heaven that God promises. If it's not my goal to glorify him. But secondly, chances of raising my children in such a fashion that they'll bring him glory if I'm not willing to sacrifice my life to do it, same thing. I need to make sure that I understand the nature of the stewardship that I have with my children. God has chosen us for a purpose. We are parents for a purpose. You didn't have to become a parent. You didn't have to. But if you did, God says, understand it comes with obligation. We have purpose in our lives. So think in terms of arrows. Tonight, we're going to talk about some of the practical ways then that we raise G-rated kids in an R-rated world, which is a very favorable lesson title. Should be an X-rated world, clearly. But it already said that on the slide. So G-rated kids in an R-rated world. Thank you so much for your attention this morning.